like to talk and read all things books and mystery. Funny stories. The characters of youth always tend to be a sleuth. The hardy boys will do. Don't forget Nancy Drew. It's a clue.
Hello, sleuths. I'm Karen.
And I'm Kelly. Welcome to It's a Clue, a faux crime comedy podcast for entrepreneurial 13-year-olds.
My favorite.
Yes. Today we are doing another Super Sleuth episode, and we will be discussing The Babysitter's Club, Super Mystery Number 1, Babysitter's Haunted House.
Yes, so, we are.
I have a thought for you to ponder.
Oh, please lay it on me.
In It's a Clue fashion. Which babysitter from the BSC did you most relate to and why?
That is a fantastic question.
I thought so. Thank you.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Of course.
Do I have to be one of the babysitters or can I be one of the baby cities, one of the children that is being sat?
You have to be a babysitter.
Oh, okay.
You need to be a club member.
I think I'm Marianne Spear.
Defend your answer, please.
Marianne in this book is very interested in going to the library.
True. Yes.
She is less interested in meeting all of the townsfolk of this new area that they're experiencing. She is focused on the job, but she likes a lot of quiet time, and she likes reading and looking for information in the tomes and archives of the library. So I think I would be Marianne Spear in this book.
Okay. I think that's a great answer for you, actually.
Oh, thank you. You know a lot more about the BSC than I do, so that means a lot to me.
Well, I think I understand why you relate to her in this book. I think as a character, you are probably not as shy as Marianne. I would consider you maybe more of like a Dawn.
Mm.
Like in general speak.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is Dawn the one from California?
She is. She's bicoastal.
Oh, I love mm-hmm. that.
Okay. AKA fancy.
Very, very fancy. I don't know if I'm fancy enough to be a Dawn.
Oh, you're plenty fancy to be a Dawn. You're probably not fancy enough to be a Stacy, but yeah, you can be a Dawn for sure.
I have Stacy questions for later in this book, but first I do need to know which babysitter did you most relate to in this book and why?
You know, I always probably identify most with Christy.
I knew it.
Which is kind of a self-own a little bit.
Please explain this. To those who aren't familiar with Christy and the BSC.
Well, Christy started the Babysitter's Club. She is Christy of The Great Idea, which is the first book. But she's kind of commonly described as bossy and opinionated and kind of, I mean, I would say she's a very type A personality. So while I don't necessarily adopt all of the negative qualities that she has, I'm sure I have them. And I guess, like, just I don't necessarily relate to any of the others that much. But Christy, I'm like, yeah, I get her. So
she's I don't think she's I you're giving
she's
Christy
a leader.
A negative.
Christy's
spin.
A
she
leader.
Is a leader and she yes. has strong vision and she is good at getting others to follow along. And the Babysitter's Club would fall apart without her.
That's true. She has a plan.
Indeed.
And she is happy to enact it, much like me. but I am curious. I have two follow-up questions for you. Number one, who is the baby city you related to most and why was it Karen?
You nailed it, yes. So I never really read The Babysitter's Club. I read The Babysitter's Little Sister books because uh-huh. that was my age range. And they were all about a girl named Karen, which, you know, that's also yeah. my name in case you weren't paying attention.
Over that bitch.
I had forgotten quite a bit about Karen. I forgot that she was so precocious, as they constantly say. She's very extroverted.
Mm-hmm.
So I perhaps mm-hmm. have less in common with her than I thought I did as a youth. But I did just love her. She just has a heart of gold.
She does.
She just wants everyone around her to have a good time. And mm-hmm.
she's very selfless.
Yes. She's there to make sure that other people feel comfortable. And I really love that about her.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and there was a lot of overlap between you and Karen Brewer growing up. I thought like you were not as like over the top as she is, but you are absolutely precocious like that, and you had like the amazing vocabulary and
Kelly.
You know, were speaking in paragraphs when you were crawling. So
I think I'm too shy to be a full Karen Brewer, but I do admire her. I admire her spunk.
Well, the other thing about Karen Brewer is that she, if I'm remembering correctly, like one of her favorite things to do is like she loves to dress up. She loves to, like, she's a big make-believer.
Oh, you know? Me too.
So, like, that's one of her favorite things. And I think that was probably more when we were little, like why I associated you with her, because I was like, oh, yeah, like, same with Karen. Like, you had a huge imagination, and
that is my jam.
Yeah, for sure. So my second question was going to be, have you read Babysitter's Club books before? But it sounds like, is this your very first one?
I think I've probably read a few, trying to be cool like my big sister, a.k.a. you. But I certainly haven't read all of them like you have. And I, listen, I'm going to say this a million times. I loved this book, and I'm like, I have like 900 books to read now. So have you read them all?
Pretty fun. No, I haven't read them all. I read, like, I mean, I own an awful lot of them, but I don't think I'd read this one. I think these super mysteries were kind of coming out on my tail end of being into the series. Like, I was maybe getting a little too old for it by the time these came out. But I read the probably first 40, 45 in the series, at least, and I own them. And then the super specials, which were, they were like, you know, this the length of this super mystery we did, but they were all white paperback covers.
I can picture them. I remember seeing them in your room. Yep.
I loved those. Like, I read those so much the spines were worn out in them. So, yeah, I love these books. I still have my collection. I love them. So,
oh, yeah. Hooray for the Babysitter's Club.
Hooray. do you want to fire up the PA?
Yes, I have some daily announcements for this group.
Fantastic.
The first daily announcement, we have a new Patreon.
Who?
I'm so excited to tell you who it is. It is the one and only Craig Silva.
Oh, Craig. I was not expecting that.
So for anyone who is new to the podcast and doesn't know who Craig is the co-host of the other podcast that I work on for work, the Libro FM podcast. He has been on this podcast. He interviewed us for our 50th episode. And Craig, we're so sorry. Craig has designed It's a Clue swag for us. He is
sure
a designer.
And it's amazing.
Incredible. We need to get back to him about the next steps on that. But y'all are going to love what Craig has designed. But Craig, we love you. Thank you
we
so
love
much.
You. Thank you.
For becoming a Helen Corning friend and for all you do for this podcast.
He was already a Helen Corning friend. It's just now he has the badge. That's all.
Yes. My last announcement is that we are taking a holiday break after this episode, which I think is well-timed. It is the end of the year. We will be coming back in mid-January when we've had some downtime. We've decompressed. We are going to hang out together. It's going to be glorious. But as always, we will miss you. So please, like, reach out to us anytime during the break. We're going to try to post some pictures of our bookstore adventures that we will inevitably go on together. But we would love to know what you all are up to. And if you have any requests or ideas for things you'd like to see in 2024, please message us. It will make us so happy.
It absolutely will. So, yeah, we'll catch you in 2024. But like Karen said, reach out. So,
yes. Okay. So with that being said, Kelly, I would love to know what you have been up to.
So I'll tell you this. I want your feedback on this. I went to a little like neighborhood concert this past weekend.
Well, that's very Gilmore Girls of you.
You know, it now that you put it that way, yes. I think you're gonna beat me to my question here. So the concert was basically a trio, like a jazz trio of local musicians that were playing the Charlie Brown music, Charlie Brown Christmas jazz music.
Stop it.
While screening the movie.
Oh my gosh.
So it was really fun, and it's like, it was literally a block from my house in this like old converted church that's now an event space. So that was fun. Like, that was a fun little Christmas thing to do. But I told a friend of mine this, and his comment was, well, that's very on brand for you. And I'm like, what does that mean?
I absolutely agree with him.
What is my brand? I thought I was a free agent.
Your brand is, I think it is, you're right, directly related to the Gilmore Girls comment. You live in a very cute, lovely neighborhood that has lots of community-oriented events. You know the people around you. It's arts related. It's cozy.
I do have a cozy brand. You're right.
It's also very quirky.
It's a little quirky.
I love it.
I'll accept that. I was like, I just don't know what. I've never thought of my brand. I don't think I have one of those. So anyway, that's what I've been doing. I've been doing stuff like that. I've been going out a ton and also sleeping a lot. So yeah.
Balance.
I'm ready for Christmas.
Likewise. I can't wait.
I need more naps in my life.
Well,
it's coming soon.
They can be yours.
I know. I have big plans for the holiday. How about you? What have you been up to?
I am also, I'm ready for a hibernation moment. I have one more roller derby practice before the season ends, and I miss it already, but I'm so ready for just like a pause, I would say.
Yeah. Yes, I get that.
I'm ready to be on your couch wrapped in a blanket watching Elf and
can do
reading a book. I can't wait for that. My main update is that though I am still new to Ypsilanti, I felt like I have finally arrived. I went to the library in Ann Arbor on Sunday, I think it was this weekend, and my holds were ready, and I realized as I was walking in the door, I do not have my library card.
Oh no.
I felt fear. I felt sadness. I was like,
I felt fear.
I drove all the way there. I'm like, will they let me have my book?
Oh no.
/ books. And I walked in, and the librarian at the desk was a guy that I randomly met at a party that my wonderful friend Sam brought me to. And he was like, oh, hey, Karen. And I said, hey, it's so nice to see you. I don't have my library card. Can I still get my books? And he was like, yeah, I know who you are. I can vouch for you. And I was like,
wow.
Yes.
It's happening.
I officially live here. So, you know, that's a very specific. Speaking of our brand, we both had moments that were very on brand for us. And I was like, yeah.
We do. And I totally understand that. Like, my biggest moment like that was when I went into my bookstore down the block, and I was told, like, I went up to the desk and was like, I have some books here held for Kelly. And the next thing I know, the bookseller's coming out from the back room going, we know who you are. Like, just come back here.
I
was
like,
oh my gosh, this is my norm moment, you know?
Yes.
This is all I've ever wanted.
we took the liberty of ordering a few others for you that we knew you would like, and we're going to order anyway.
I would
anyway,
be so totally fine with that. I am frequently steered towards special displays in that store where they're like, did you see the special display? There's probably some stuff on there you'd like. And I'm like, I'm one step ahead of you. I bought all of those books already.
Not a problem.
But you are correct in your assessment of my taste. So I would like to pull this train right up now to the recommendation station. Woo woo.
Woo woo.
Do you have some recs?
I have one, and I had to look back because I was like, did I recommend this last time? I don't think I did. So
I'm looking at the paper. No, you have not.
I just read and very much enjoyed this book called Killers of a Certain Age.
I've seen this. I know of which you speak. I have not read it.
Okay. It is by Deanna Rayborn. It was written in 2022. So like fairly recent. Mm-hmm. I think one might categorize it kind of in the cozy mystery category, but there is some pretty intense action. But essentially the plot of this book is about four women who are now in their 60s, but they were like the female version of James Bond. Like when they were in their 20s, they got recruited to be assassins for this elite organization of people that were like hunting down Nazis, essentially.
Cool.
now they're in their 60s. They're going to their retirement party. They get to their retirement party and they realize that there's someone at this party that's trying to take a hit out on them. And they think it's their organization that's like, they know too much.
Adding this to my Goodreads right now. Please hold.
So
this sounds amazing.
The whole book is them trying to figure out who's after them, what to do about it, calling in all of their skills that they thought they would never have to use again. And it flashes back and forth in time from jobs they were doing as young assassins and what's happening right now in the current timeline. It is fantastic. I could not put it down.
Okay, I love it. That sounds like I'm definitely going to have to read that. That sounds amazing.
Oh, perfect, because I've already started my, I know I'm not coming to see you for like a few more weeks or a couple more weeks, but I've already started my Kelly pile and I put that in the pile to bring you.
You're bringing that to me?
Yes! Oh,
thank you.
My pleasure. So nice. You're really going to enjoy it. And you read so fast, you'll probably read it in one sitting. It's great.
Well, on that note, I have nothing to recommend because I've been sleeping too much. Like, I have barely read any books.
That's
fine. I did read The Babysitter's Club.
You've read like 100 books this year.
I have read 98. And so I will
take a break.
I will make it. I will make it. I will get two more in under the deadline. But like, yeah, no. I just, like, my whole thing was the reason I was able to read so much is I was really good about getting up early, and then I would read the morning before work, and then I would read a lot at night before I went to bed, and I'm just like, nope, I can't get up early and I am going to sleep early too.
So. Yeah, it's so dark all the time. Of course you are. And that 'tis the season, Kelly. Get the rest.
And the cat is asleep and warm. I mean, my cat starts yelling at me at roughly 8:15 to go to bed.
Okay,
and while I don't cave that early,
that's too early. Like,
no, I won't cave that early, but like, he wants to go to bed that early, so then he gets like small and cute and cozy, and you know, it's just hard. So.
I know.
Yeah. Anyway.
Listen, you don't have to have a recommendation every time we record.
Thanks, Karen.
You don't have to do anything. You just have to keep being the best Kelly that you can be.
Oh, thank you.
And you're crushing it.
Karen, I hesitate to even ask this because I'm not sure what you could have possibly procured, but do you have any background information on this book?
Oh, Kelly. As our father says, now that we are in the information age, there's never a reason not to know more. So I do have information about this book. Let me tell you. Okay. The book we read this week is book number one in a special side series of the Babysitter's Club books, which is the Super Mystery series.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, this is not to be confused with the mystery series.
Correct.
Of which there are 36 Babysitter's Club books.
Correct.
These are the super mysteries, which combine the mystery series and the super special series.
Yes.
In one format.
So, like, the normal length Babysitter's Club books are the same length as the normal mystery books.
Yes.
Yes. And so then there's the super specials and the super mysteries, which are longer.
Yes, it's a super mystery. Yeah. I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the mysteries, the regular length ones, are told mm-hmm. from the perspective of one babysitter.
More, yes. I think they still bounce around from perspectives a little bit. Like, I don't think there are any of them that are just from one perspective, but they're more one babysitter's story, for sure.
Yes. And so and we'll, again, discuss this at length and things we loved about this book, but every chapter of The Super Mystery is a different babysitter's perspective or a different babysittee's perspective. The children, correct, also, their voices are heard. There are four of these super mysteries. I desperately want to read them all. And in hindsight, we probably should have read the fourth one because I looked and it's The Babysitter's Christmas Chiller.
Yeah, I know. I saw that too late too. But hey, you know what? We started at the start. So.
Yeah, YOLO. So I am 100% on board to read all of these. This book was published in June of 1995. So I would have just turned 10 when this came out and you would have been about to turn 13. So I see what you're saying. This was like... Mm-hmm. Because these are more middle grade age.
Yeah.
Like 8 to 12 kind of age range. Written by Anne M. Martin.
The Queen.
The Queen, Anne M. Martin. There is a tagline on the cover of this book, which tickles me. It says, "The Babysitter's Club will protect the kids, but who will protect the Babysitter's Club?" And Kelly, who indeed? But also, I'm like, LOL, because the Babysitter's Club are also kids.
They're correct. Like, they are also children.
Yes.
Who indeed, as you said.
The last thing I wanted to share, so we could talk about Anne M. Martin and this series all day long. There's just so much information because there are so many books. But here is a thing that overlaps a lot with Nancy Drew. So Anne began writing this series in 1985 while she was working as an editor for Scholastic Books.
Okay.
Yep. And she wrote the first 35 novels in the Babysitter's Club series. And after that, it was so popular, Scholastic hired ghostwriters to write the rest of the series.
Interesting. I don't think I knew that.
She's written a bunch of other stuff, not ghostwritten, but she kind of handed the series over after 35 of these. And they're like, let's keep this going. And then she started writing more one-off kind of YA middle grade novels. But yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. I mean, it's not surprising given how many of these books there are, but I don't necessarily think I knew that. So
yeah, it's the Stratemeyer Syndicate all over Scholastic. Seriously. Books. Who knew?
Well, and it does make sense given that, I mean, I remember it felt like there was a new one of these books coming out like every 6 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They were just constant. So.
Well, and there were the Karen books that were coming out. Mm-hmm. And then the, like, yeah, the special edition ones. It would be pretty impossible, I think, for one person to...
Yeah, keep up that pace.
Churning out that content. So, Okay, that's what I have. And now I would like to hand it over to you for the one sentence plot competition.
Oh, I would love to assist with this. So, one sentence plot, I'm sure most of you know this already, but we went ahead and did it with the super special this week. We don't necessarily always do it for super specials, but we put up the picture of the cover on Instagram, and with no additional knowledge of the book, we ask you to guess what's happening in that book in one sentence. And as we say on the IG, creative punctuation is encouraged.
Yes.
And possibly even rewarded. So the winning entry this week is, and I hope I pronounced this right, @TracyTrebendis. Who said, "Christy is shocked that apparently ghosts do not care that she is the president, nor do they like being bossed around. Marianne is distracted by random architectural details that were not in her guidebook. Dawn's all, I mean, I guess it's okay, but we have way cooler ghosts in California. The kids are still trying to figure out why they need four babysitters. And Claudia prays Christy won't make her write the club notebook entry about this one because there's no way she'll ever be able to spell poltergeist." Period.
I love it. I think this is the second time Tracy has won, and it is always a delight.
On point. On point. No notes. So without further ado, today's super fast plot is on deck, and yeah. I see that you are making me read it this time.
Oh, yeah. Girl, I wrote it, and it is your turn to read it. And
all right.
I hope you enjoy the surprises I have in store for you.
I am so excited. Okay, I'll do my best to do it justice. Ready?
Ready.
Okay. Summer break has begun and the Babysitter's Club is busier than ever. Trusted client Lisa calls and needs two sitters to accompany her family on a 10-day trip to Reese, Maine. They'll be joining another family, the Menderses, who have four children. The Menderses have inherited a mansion in Reese and want to scout it out to see if, one, they should move there, and two, if they can open a successful health food store there. The BSC get into a bit of a quibble about who the two sitters should be, because pretty much everyone wants to go. In the end, they convince Lisa to take four of them, since six kids will need sitting. They'll forego payment, but will get an all-expenses-paid trip to Maine. The mansion is much bigger than they anticipate, and the six children have such wildly different personalities and expectations for this trip that the BSC really have their hands full. If that's not enough, the mansion appears to be haunted. At night, they hear footsteps coming from the locked-up fourth floor, They hear moaning and screaming in the walls, and sometimes when they're outside, they see flashing lights and a spooky figure moving about the widow's walk at the top of the house. The BSC are freaked out, and rightfully so. So, in addition to trying to help make sure the Mender's kids fall in love with their new hometown and make some dang friends, they are now trying to solve a mystery. There are two kind of creepy caretakers on the property, the Coopers, who tell the girls a bunch of terrifying stories about the Randolph family who used to own the mansion. Most notably, they tell them that a woman named Lydia was locked in the attic for years because her family wanted to keep her away from her beloved gardener. Also, they tell the girls that old Mrs. Randolph fell from the widow's walk after learning of her husband's death. These are not nice things to tell children. The BSC goes to the local library and gets some hot tips from the librarian and her archives. They figure out that the Coopers may have been exaggerating some of the creepy tales, and also find that there is a secret dumbwaiter that provides quick access through several floors of the house. After a lot of shenanigans and sleuthing, they discover that the Coopers are not really who they say they are. They are, in fact, related to the Randolph family, and are trying to prevent the Menderses from moving in so that they can take over the mansion. Pretending to be a ghost to get people to leave a house that isn't yours? How Nancy Drew of them. The BSC reveals the Coopers' hijinks, the Coopers flee town to return to Scotland, and the children fall in love with the town of Rees thanks to some absolutely phenomenal babysitting tactics. The babysitters are not paid for their work, just like their hero, Nancy Drew. The end.
Beautifully read, Kelly.
Hilarious, Karen.
Is it accurate?
Babysitters are not paid for their work, just like their hero, Nancy Drew.
They want to be like Nancy Drew, and they nailed it.
So, Karen, I would love to know at this time your GTNMs, a.k.a. your general thoughts and musings.
Okay, well, are you ready? You want me to lay it on you?
Mm-hmm.
This book is phenomenal.
Yay!
Period. Amen.
I've been pushing the BSC so hard.
For 30 years.
For 30 years, I have been pushing this series on you, and finally,
I get it now. I understand. These books are so good. At least this one was.
They're all fun. Yeah.
I love how different the characters are and fully formed. I loved the perspective shifts. This plot was so suspenseful. We have cliffhanger after cliffhanger at the ends of chapters. Mm-hmm. I love the business acumen of the club. I think I'm addicted. Also, I loved that Nancy Drew gets mentioned as a hero of Claudia's three times as the book is starting. I was like, Nancy has inspired millions.
She's inspired other fictional characters to greatness.
I know. I love it. And clearly is beloved by Anne M. Martin, if Anne M. Martin knew to write about her. So absolutely, it just couldn't have been a better choice. Kelly, thank you.
You're welcome. I'm really glad you liked it. So.
Yes. Okay, what are your thoughts and musings?
I mean, I obviously loved it. obviously. I just love the series. Like you said, I like the different character perspectives in each chapter. I love the letters and the journal entries. And that's something that happens in all the books. Like, they all start with those, like, handwritten letters or journal entries. I like the entrepreneurialism. It was always so cool to me when I was a kid to think about, you know, girls just barely older than me starting this, like, wildly successful business. I thought that was really fun. Claudia being a big Nancy Drew fan, I remember that now. Because it's, if I'm remembering correctly through the series, like, those are literally the only books she reads. She'll read Nancy Drew and basically nothing else. So all of the other books in her bedroom are hollow. And that's where she hides her candy and snacks, which I also was like, squad goals.
Love it.
On a more macro level, I guess. Like, I just like how these girls aren't perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, Nancy is a little too perfect sometimes, you know? But, like, all of these girls have their own very individual strengths and they're very individual weaknesses. And I like that they're, like you said, they're fully formed. They're well-rounded. They're not perfect. They argue. They bicker. They have bad days. They make bad decisions. They make mistakes. And it's those things that give them things to work through. So I think part of what makes these books fun is that, like, with the exception of, like, the mystery books, really what they're coming up against are like just real life scenarios that they have to navigate, you know, based on personal conflict or mistakes they've made or, you know, kind of normal situations they've gotten into. So, yeah.
Beautifully stated.
I don't know about that. It was a little rambly, but I appreciate your support. On a side note, do you remember when we moved to St. Louis and we got released to go see the house and to pick our bedrooms? And I picked the small room.
Your room was not smaller than mine in St. Louis.
It wasn't? Well, I picked a very specific room regardless of... I don't remember what yours looked like. I'll be completely honest. I probably wasn't allowed in.
Very little.
But my bedroom had a phone on the wall.
Oh my gosh, I didn't remember that.
There was an old like corded telephone on the wall in that room that was just there when we moved in. And so that's the room I picked. And I remember mom being like, "Wait, why do you want this room?" And I was like, "Cause I want that phone." And she's like, "That phone doesn't have to stay here." And I was like, "But how but else does. Am I going to start a babysitter's club?" it didn't have its own line, but I was like, "This, I'm one step away, you know."
I'm that much so closer. Cute.
Yeah, that's why I picked that room for sure. I was very excited.
Oh,
so.
I love that. Well, there is a old like rotary phone attached to a post in my creepy basement. If you want to start a BSC up here in Ypsilanti,
we could start a you know really kind of late in life babysitting service out of your cellar.
I think I might be beyond that, but
I am for sure beyond that. But you know, I mean, we have a recession coming, so push come to shove.
Indeed. Backup plan.
So Karen, shall we dive into our favorite parts, please?
Yes.
I'm dying to know your favorite parts of this book.
Okay, I won't belabor this because I feel like I mentioned this already in my multiple enthusiasms for this book, but I really did enjoy the rotating perspectives. So yeah. Each chapter is a different babysitter or child being babysat. And mm-hmm. as you just mentioned, there's a handwritten journal entry, like an image at the mm-hmm. beginning of each chapter. The handwriting is different, and it's a little blurb about that person's perspective about what's happening in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think I extra loved this because we've talked about the fact that we wish there was more of that with Nancy Drew, you know?
Yeah, like a little personal insight.
Yeah, like what actually is Bess's hot take on what's happening?
Yeah. And, oh, yeah, yeah.
And what does George think about this, or Ned think about this, or whoever?
Yeah,
Hannah Gruen. I would love a Hannah chapter.
Yes,
but not the Babysitter's Club. Nancy Drew is all third person. It's kind of this slightly omniscient narrator that's talking for everyone, and I just loved the glimpse into each person's unique personality and a little bit of a different vibe for what's going down, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. And I think it's one of the reasons I like these books so much. And I think it helps keep them moving too, because you don't get bored with one person's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I think the authors, since now we know there were ghostwriters, but I think the writers and certainly Anna Martin to begin with, you know, for kind of crafting these characters, like they really do get, you can tell the difference between each character, which I think it's got to be challenging to write that when it's switching between first person narrators to make them each have their own voice and, you know, their own writing style, even, you know, like they're, you can tell just from their writing style in those journals who is who. So yeah, I think it's a fun way. And you're totally right. Like, I would actually love that if we had like even one Nancy Drew book where we got a flip in perspective from, you know, between the Clue Crew. That would be really fun. You should write that.
Me? What?
I mean, I don't want to do it, but
you should write it. Well,
can I not assign that to you? That's such a Christy thing to do.
No, Christy, I'm busy. I'm Marianning my way out of this situation. The other thing that I will say about that, though, that I think is really cool about this book. So we have the main story afoot, which is four of the babysitters have gone to Reese, Maine. They are investigating this mystery. all of the stuff that's going on there. But we occasionally get these chapters that are from the perspective of Mallory and Jesse, mm-hmm. who are the two babysitters who are left behind in Stony Brook to be in charge of the club and answer the phones and take care of the local babysitting jobs. And Mallory and Jesse are They're 11.
They're sixth graders. They're 11 years old. Yeah.
And they're desperately trying to keep the Babysitter's Club afloat by themselves and having a really hard time doing it. And
they're,
so scared.
They're on the struggle bus. And, like, very understandably, they're having a rough time. But yeah, I got to tell you, I had two of the, like, I think, well, one was funny, haha, and one was funny, like, eye roll. But my two favorite moments with Mallory and Jesse are thus. So the first one is, and I knew it was going to happen as soon as I read it. They, like, voluntell Logan that he's going to, like, they sign him up for a babysitting job because they're only allowed to babysit during the day.
Oh, yes.
They're not allowed to take nighttime jobs. So they're, like, covering all these daytime jobs, but all the nighttime jobs have to get fielded out to either Shannon or Logan, or they have to turn them down. So they sign Logan up for a nighttime job, but he's not there. He's at his other job. He's at his waiter job at the time. And I was like, oh, they're going to forget to tell him. And sure enough, they forget to tell Logan about his babysitting job. And when they realize it, luckily they realize it with a little bit of time to spare. And
not much.
Not much, like an hour. And he's at his other job. They're going to have to run over there and be like, hate to tell you, but you need to leave and go straight over to, like, the Bradford's house because you got a gig tonight, buddy. Whoops. Sorry. The funniest part of all this is that they're sitting in Claudia's bedroom having their meeting when they realize this. And then they keep forgetting about it. So, like, they go, over oh, no, we didn't over. Tell Logan. And then they get distracted and forget about it. Again, like, they remember, I think, 3 or 4 times in the course of this conversation that, oh, my gosh, we have got to go tell Logan about his job tonight. And it was hysterically funny to me for some reason.
I agree. And also for context, for anyone who has not read the Babysitter's Club books, Logan is the boyfriend of one of the babysitters who just kind of is a subsidiary of this. Like, he's
Logan is a subsidiary?
Yes, he's like not a subsidiary.
Yes, he's an alternate member.
He's a pinch hitter. And he's like, I didn't even really want to do this in the first place, but now suddenly he has become, like, the linchpin of the success of the Babysitter's Club.
He is. Like, there is a lot riding on poor Logan's shoulders. And he's like, man, you know, like, I just wanted to take Marianne out for, like, a slice of pizza. And now here I am, you know, jumping from job to job because Mallory forgot to tell me about a gig. But the other one is... So at some point, Mallory and Jesse, in an attempt to, like, not have to keep turning down all of this business, they both agree to watch, like, independently of one another, like, 10 children each.
Oh, yeah.
During this, like, 4th of July celebration. And they're going to take the kids to this 4th of July parade and barbecue and all this stuff. So between the two of them, they're watching, like, 20 kids. And they're a little nervous. Like, I was like... I'm terrified for you, you yes. know, and I'm pretty sure this book doesn't end with, like, a CNN alert. So I'm nervous for you.
And they're 11.
They're 11. Here's the funniest part. And again, this is not funny, haha, but sign of the times. So they talk about how. Oh, luckily, we're going to have a little bit of backup because Mallory's dad is available. He was just going to go attend the parade by himself, even though she's babysitting 7 of his children. So he's able to help her. And I was like, wait a second. Mallory's watching Mallory and then 6 of her siblings and then 4 randos, but, like, what, you were just going to go to a parade without your own children? Like, what is happening right now?
Say, best of luck.
So, right. Like, now I want to have a snow cone by myself. You know, it's so weird. So anyway,
that's
Mallory's
good
dad came through in a pinch and was able to help her babysit his children.
I did not clock that. And you are absolutely correct.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Tell me a favorite part of yours.
Oh, okay. So I liked I liked the kids that were being sat.
Same.
Yeah. So we have Christy's step siblings, because Lisa, the client that calls her for help, is Karen and Andrew's mother.
Yes.
So, and she loves her little step siblings. So we have Karen and Andrew, and like Karen, as we have discussed, is like very precocious, very effusive, gets into all kinds of shenanigans, like out of this desire to help everybody.
Yep.
We have adorable little baby Andrew, who's just like running around saying ribbit.
Yes, because he's very into frogs. He loves a frog moment.
He also finds this toy boat up in the attic, and he's like becomes obsessed with this antique toy boat. So Andrew's adorable. But then we have the Manfrusifsises,
the Menders family.
So the Menderses are, we have Martha, who's Karen's age, and Martha is like the opposite personality of Karen. So like those two together are like the perfect foils, right? They're hilarious, but also I felt for Martha. Like,
yes, like they'll go to the grocery store and Karen will approach stranger children and be like, yeah, you should meet the most amazing girl in the world, Martha Menders. And Martha's like, I cannot.
Yeah, I'm just gonna like fade back into the frozen foods aisle, if you could not please.
At one point she just leaves and I was like, Martha, good on you.
Sometimes you just need to remove yourself from a toxic situation. So that's Karen and Martha. Hilarious dynamic. Then we have like an 11-year-old, I think, boy. Jason. And Jason, not that interesting. He winds up kind of teaming up with Christy. Christy helps get him onto the local softball team. That's how he comes out of his shell. We can skip over him. Then we have Jill, who is like 10 or 11, and she is obsessed with Dawn.
Like, what's that movie with the rabbit on the stove?
Yes, Fatal Attraction. That, is it Fatal Attraction?
Yes. That's Jill with regards to Dawn. She is glued to Dawn. She asks her every day, what are we wearing today? What are we doing today? She does not care about, she only has eyes for Dawn.
Yeah, like, I was like, Dawn, I would be locking my door at night. And then we have Lionel, who is actually a very interesting character. He's older than the Babysitter's Club, though. He's 14.
Yes.
So I'm not sure. Like, he was never counted as one of the babysittees, but I'm not quite sure why he wasn't just watching his own siblings rather than bringing four random girls onto this trip to watch them.
You make a good point.
Whatever. That doesn't help our story. Lionel, though, is an aspiring actor.
Ah, yes. He wants to trod the boards.
He does. And he's actually very fun in a, like, teenage boy kind of way. He's, like, very into his craft. He uses lots of accents. He's always, you know, trying a new, you know, character on for size. And what I thought, which I kind of loved, he ends up going to see a summer stock production of Dracula.
Yes.
Which I was like, that doesn't make any sense, but okay. I mean, I guess it fits the spooky season. Like, why are we doing Dracula in the summer?
In July.
Yeah. I don't get it, but okay. Also, summer stock tends to be musicals, but ask me how I know. But so he winds up becoming friends with all of these Dracula people during the summer in Maine. Which I actually did summer stock in Maine. Huh, forgot about that. I'm going to get to this later, but some of his ability to do accents actually helps crack the case.
Indeed it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, that concludes my list. Anything to add to that?
No, I think that was a great topic to discuss, though, because I have the hiccups.
You do?
Pardon me. I loved the youths. I can't stop hiccuping.
Karen, you're not a fish.
What does that mean?
Just, you're not a fish.
Oh my god, it worked. Why is that a thing?
I don't know, but it works.
That they immediately went away.
Mm-hmm.
I have follow-up questions, but we'll save that for another time. Okay, so the thing that I have to talk about, you won't be surprised. Real World Reese Main.
Oh my gosh. Please tell me you're going to talk about what I hope you're going to talk about.
Yeah, there is a little romance, a flirtation. I don't know that I love it. So Claudia is one of our babysitters on this trip. And I would say that Claudia has long been my favorite babysitter. Even though I didn't really read these books, I always was like, she is so cool. She's
very cool.
She's very hip. She is the fashion babysitter. She's an artist.
Yes.
Visual artist, painting, drawing, creating lots of cool things. Great color theory. She wears wacky great fashion. Clothes. Yeah. Love her.
Those were always some of my favorite parts is just like, and they did it like 5 times in this book, just describing her outfits.
Yes, she's amazing. So let me remind you, Claudia, like the other babysitters, is 13. There is a young man on the grounds of this mansion who is related to the former gardeners that worked there. His name is Giorgio Trono. And
yes, he's an employee, to be clear. He's on the pay, like he's the gardener.
Yes, he takes a
full grown man.
Takes a real shine to our dear sweet Claudia. And she's like, oh, apparently he is very cute.
Well, his name's Giorgio. I mean, how could he not be?
It's also, though, unclear to them for a very long time if Giorgio might be the bad guy.
Right.
Because he has access to a lot of parts of the campus.
the compound.
The mansion and its grounds. He has keys to everything. They're like, maybe he's the one creeping around upstairs. He also has a weird knack for showing up very suddenly, as if he has read their minds. They're like, how did he know we were talking about that? There's a big chunk of this book where we're like, Giorgio may be a killer. But
he's definitely a lurker.
Yes. Yeah. But he is very clearly crushing on Claude. And she is too, but with some druthers, I would say. At one point, though, they're sleuthing around, they're in the gardener shed, and she finds out that this boy is in college.
He's 19.
He's 19 years old. At first she's like, oh no, he has a driver's license, he can drive a car, he's like 3 years older than me. No, Kelly, Giorgio is pushing 20.
Yeah.
And she's 13, and he just assumes she's 16, which is still not okay.
I know, that was my thing. I was like, I mean, that's not that much better, dude. Like,
no, it's still
it's still a sophomore.
Illegal.
Yeah.
Anywho, that was anyway. Odd.
Yeah. And this happens a lot in super specials, where at the end of the book, there's conclusions with more handwritten letters.
Oh.
Yeah, like it's a big thing, specifically in these super specials. So because a lot of the time they're traveling in these books, and so this is, you know, pre-email, this is their way to kind of like put a button on some of these like vacation friendships and relationships that have happened. So yeah, I loved how at the end of this book she finally writes him a letter, long form, and comes clean that she's only 13, and there is no response.
No, nor should there have been.
Nor should there be.
Giorgio.
Woof.
Bro.
Yeah.
Bro.
Yeah. He asked her to homecoming.
He asked her to come to his college. Oh, I can't. Yeah. I cannot. That's a lot. Anyway.
Anyway, it's nice to be wanted.
Okay. Yeah. Other favorite parts?
One of my favorite things with all of these books is that even though there is a main through line, whether it's in a normal BSC book or one of the mysteries, there's always a through line, but that's not the only thing we talk about. Mm-hmm. So because I sometimes think that's what gets like a little drudgery like with Nancy Drew, where I'm like, okay, can we go to like a dance or something, you know, like can we have dinner, you know, or it's just we get so single-minded on the mystery. So one of the things that I love in these books is that there are always like side quests that we get to go on, for lack of a better way of phrasing it. And in this book, like, it was so fun to get to have these little activities that pop up. most of them are ways to entertain the kids or things to like distract the kids or, you know, whatever. So in this book, we have a formal dinner party in the formal dining room with like the fancy china and place settings. And everybody dresses up with like old, like these gorgeous old formal dresses and suits from the attic.
Yes.
I was like, that sounds like so much fun. Like, Karen, that's your dream.
It is absolutely my dream. And they had roles to play, like, not Lucas. What's his name? The boy.
Lionel.
Lionel is like the greeter, and he's welcoming everyone in and showing them their place cards. And I loved it. I loved it so much.
Yeah. So I love that. They both sets of babysitters, the ones in Maine and Jesse and Mallory back in Connecticut, they both end up doing parades and participating in their local 4th of July parades. I particularly loved the parade, which it's so funny. This is not the first or the last time in these books that they make a float for a parade.
Really?
Which I'm just like, no, yeah, they do it all the time. Like, it's a very frequent activity for them, which I'm just like, I have never once been in a parade, much less make a float for a parade. But this is a common thing for the BSC. I loved their parade float. They turned Giorgio's pickup truck into the widow's walk of the Randolph Mansion.
Yes.
And then they all dress up in, you know, these old-fashioned clothes. And the float was basically like Happy 4th of July from the Randolph Mansion, which I thought was kind of a fun, like historic nod, you know, because I think these buildings do kind of take on like they become their own character in cities and in little towns like this. So.
Absolutely.
They get to do face painting.
Yes.
Like Claudia sets up a face painting booth to help raise money for the local swim team that they're trying to get Martha and Jill to join. I'm like, it's so wholesome. I can't.
It's so sweet.
Yeah. And maybe my favorite is that at one point, I think they're reading Frog and Toad.
They are.
One of the babysitters is, yeah, she's reading that to the kids one night. And Andrew asks, like, what's the difference between frogs and toads? And Christy goes, let's go find them. Let's go find some and we'll compare them. And so they all troop out to this like little pond behind the Randolph Mansion at night and hunt down a frog, hunt down a toad. And yeah, I thought it was really cute. So
they're really good babysitters. And I remember like when you and I began babysitting, I mean, you before me, but I remember feeling strongly like I need to have a kit of activities.
Oh, yeah.
And like, they have set the bar very high for what good babysitting looks like. And I remember both of us wanting to achieve that bar.
Any other favorite moments?
My last one is very fast. It's a cat moment. But
there's, I love a cat moment.
There's a black cat that just lives in this house named Spooky who just is there. It sounds like this cat is 1,000. They're like,
probably.
He just belonged to the old owners and has never left. This cat probably twice a chapter terrifies people just by being a cat. It's
right.
Just like walks into a room and meows and like, oh God, I thought it was the ghost. Like constantly everyone is being terrified by this cat. And I feel so bad for the cat because it's like, I'm just walking around, man. Like,
I'm just doing cat stuff, you know?
They
just existing.
Jump scare city. And this cat is just like, I literally just entered a room. I don't.
Yeah.
We need to rehome Spooky. I'm worried about Spooky.
I think you might be right.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to It Would Have Been Awesome If, in which we talk about things that it would have been awesome if it happened instead of what actually happened in the book. Did you have any? Although this book is basically flawless, I'm curious if you had any.
You know, the only thing really is that there wasn't ever an official capture of the bad guys because they kind of figured that the babysitters were onto them and they fled the country.
You're right.
But there's a moment after the BSC dropped the dime on the Coopers to the adults.
Drop the dime.
Yeah.
I've never heard that. I like it. I'm sorry.
Never heard that phrase?
No. This is episode 58 of this podcast that I've never
heard. Okay. Yeah, they ratted them out big time, man.
They did. They did.
Yeah. They were like, excuse me, adults, we have some intel we probably should have shared 48 hours ago, but it's time. So by the time they do that, the Coopers have fled the country. But there is a moment where I think it's Christy. I could be wrong about that. But one of the babysitters, they're all out at this like fair or something. And they think they see one of the Coopers at this fair. And when they tell the adults, they're like, I don't think they're gone. Like, I think I saw them at the fair. They were like, no, they're definitely gone. Like, you know, we had Interpol track them or something.
Scotland Yard is on the case.
Exactly. Like, we've got the feds on this one. We know where they are. They were like, no, they've definitely left the country. I just think it would have been kind of great if there was that, like, the parents think everything's fine. The Coopers have left the country. We're safe now. They tell the babysitters, we're safe. You guys go enjoy the fair. But they're not really safe.
Ooh.
You know, like they've done a, you know, a loop around and, you know, Interpol doesn't know where they are. You know, like they switched hats in the airport and, you know.
Yep.
Nobody knows.
Yep.
And they've come back for some reason, you know, to wreak revenge or to, you know, like liberate some hidden treasure or something like that. And Christy spots them. And because she's Christy, she gets the entire BSC to like phalanx around them and corner them, and they're mm-hmm. able to actually capture them at the fairgrounds. You know
who would orchestrate the takedown?
Karen.
Correct.
That is right. Karen would.
It is really funny that you feel like Christy and I do have some Karen overlap, because they would be the two that take down these criminals together. Would.
They're like, we can handle this. Marianne, go back to the, you know, bottle toss. We got this. Yeah.
You can write the script for the biopic that comes out in 15 years.
Exactly. But we'll be involved. So yeah, those are mine. I also think it'd be really fun if, like, so there was this reference to a treasure in the attic, and then they're never quite able to solve that, which really bugs them. But then afterwards, Andrew's antique toy boat that he was allowed to take home with him, they realize is named like the treasure.
Lame.
Which I thought was a little lame, because why would someone on their deathbed be talking about this random boat in the attic if it, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, so, well, if it was Nancy Drew, it would have been a double entendre sort of thing, where like if you smash the boat, there's,
right, it's full of gold or something.
It's full of Benjamin Franklin stamps that are
exactly, you know. Exactly. It's got a stained glass window inside of it, you know, something like that. I don't know. But yes. Yeah, I wish there had been something inside that boat, like, that they had found when they got it home. And of course, because the BSC are very ethical, they would have called to return it, and the Menderses would have been like, you know what, you hang on to that, you know, $500 as payment or something like
and
that.
And then the BSC would have said, the joy of the sleuth was enough for us. We're going to donate this to the local Rotary Club. Yep.
And they would have.
I know.
They for sure would have. So, yeah. Anyway, what would you have done differently?
You know, my only thing is that I just, again, I am beating a dead horse, but I just loved the little kids, the ones that are being babysat.
Yeah.
And though they have their own chapters where they narrate a bit from their perspective, I kind of wanted the kids to be more involved in the solving of the mystery.
Ooh, yes.
So, like, I do feel that throughout the telling of this, the kids know something is going on. Despite,
oh, they're very very perceptive.
Yes. And that is despite the babysitter's best efforts to be like, mm-hmm. no, it's going to be too scary for them. We just want them to have a good time and focus mm-hmm. on getting to know their new town. The babysitters think they're crushing it and that these kids have no idea that, you know, they're losing their minds that there's a ghost in the house. The kids definitely know something is up. So
they definitely know. Yeah.
I feel like, what if Jillian and Martha, the two sisters,
mm-hmm.
finally have their bonding moment because they mm-hmm. find some of the clues on the library adventure?
Ooh, okay.
You know, or the two brothers, Jason and Lionel, who were trying so hard to get to bond and settle in. What if they meet someone on this baseball team that they're trying to join. Oh. And the person on the baseball team has some epic information about the new home that sets them off on a trail, you know? It's so like,
yes,
I do recognize that this mystery was kind of scary, and I do realize that the babysitters were trying to protect them, but I kind of feel like it would have been an amazing way for the kids to have learned more about their home and their hometown and have had some agency in claiming their space, as it were.
I really like that. I think that would be an improvement for sure.
Let's talk about the Nancy Drew Babysitter's Club Venn diagram. We did this with the Hardy Boys last episode. So we're going to talk about key similarities between these universes and key differences.
Great.
How would you like to go about this? Do you want to both talk about similarities?
Sure.
And differences, yeah. Or one of what's your
why don't you talk about similarities?
Okay. So the first thing that is the most obvious is that basically the plot of this book is the plot of the first three Nancy Drew books.
Exactly.
We have a financially motivated crime in that the baddies are trying to steal an inheritance by scaring people away from a property by pretending to be ghosts.
Yes. It's quite literally Nancy Drew books. Yes.
And so I think it was good of Anne M. Martin / the ghostwriters to mention Nancy Drew several times in this, because if you, like us, have read 500 Nancy Drew books, you're like, wow, we really ripped this plot straight out of Nancy Drew. So
yes,
it's kind of a rewrite. We'll call it a rewrite. We've got hidden passages. We've got spooky corridors to explore, et cetera, like in Nancy Drew. We got to bring our flashlights.
We do. Lots of flashlights.
We sleuth as a team.
Yes, which they picked up on much quicker as a necessity than Nancy and Co. But
oh my
yes.
gosh, correct. Don't split up. Go together.
Right.
But like the Clue crew, they each kind of bring a unique skill set to the challenge, which I loved.
Yes.
Everybody's got their strengths and weaknesses, and together, you know, we shall succeed. Like, Bess is really good at riding a water horse. Dawn is fearless. They're like, I'm claustrophobic. I'm not going to go into this dumbwaiter shaft by myself and get locked in. And Dawn's like, put me in, coach. You know? Loved it. So I love the sleuthing as a team. And I will say, perhaps most importantly in that vein, we've got these self-sufficient female heroes that have a lot of talents, and they're like, we can do this on our own. I don't care how old I am. I don't care what anybody says. Like, we're going to figure this out by ourselves. There
Great
are
point.
Boys their age that are involved, suitors, one might say, that they allow to assist as needed.
They're called on for, like, utilitarian purposes. Like,
yes, exactly like the Emerson football team. So we do call in specialty knowledge from the young men, but they're kind of secondary to the task at hand. Like, this is about the young women that are solving this mystery, and I will never get sick of that ever.
Same.
The last two things I will say, as with Nancy, I liked that the grown-ups take them really seriously in the same way that, like, Carson and Hannah take Nancy and the Clue crew seriously, and Chief McGinnis.
Yep.
If Nancy and the Clue crew say something is what's going down, they're like, wow, take note.
Deploy the forces.
Yes. And the grown-ups in this book really took the Babysitter's Club seriously. They were like, thank you so much. We're grateful for the work that you've done. You're crushing it. Wow. We never would have figured this out without you. However, unfortunately, much like their hero, Nancy Drew, they get no compensation for this. They don't even get paid for babysitting, Kelly.
I know, but they knew that going in.
I know, but it was such a hard job, and they solved a crime.
You're not wrong. Like, I feel like we agreed to take care of these kids. We did not agree to roust out a bunch of international fraudsters in the
property
process.
Thieves.
So, like,
yes.
Yeah. Is there not, like, a little bit of can't you take a little bit of money out of this gigantic inheritance that you're flaunting in our faces to pay your detectives? No? Okay, we'll take this boat then.
I'm stressed.
Yeah, I know.
I don't like it. Any key overlaps that you would like to talk about?
I will just say the very last sentence of the epilogue, I'm going to read it to you, was this. I had this nagging feeling there was a treasure we'd missed. I told myself that I shouldn't expect to solve the mystery of the hidden treasure, but be satisfied that we'd served and solved the mystery of the haunted house. So that feels like a direct reference to, like, those are very Nancy Drew titles, first of all. But it also feels like a direct reference to the end of every Nancy Drew book. Like, the last line, or one of the very last lines of every Nancy Drew book is, you know, like, Nancy would soon be embroiled in another mystery, the case of the 39 cats or whatever, you know, but for now she was good. So like, it just feels like that same kind of sign off. Like, so if that was not intentionally referencing Nancy Drew, the coincidence is uncanny, but I do think it was referencing Nancy Drew books.
I think you're totally right. I had that moment as well where it's like, we are breaking the fourth wall a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's not a correct use of that term, but it's like, we are directly referencing the title of this book. And there's like a weird awareness that we are in a, you know, and yes, Nancy does that every single time.
That we have slipped into the Nancy verse here for a minute. So yeah, anyway, lots of overlap. I agree with you.
What about differences?
Well, you've already talked about one, which is, you know, the rotating perspectives. So just, you know, the perspective and, you know, the first person narrators in general is different. The Clue Crew, and I talked about this a little bit already, but like, the Clue Crew has a single task, which is the mystery.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes we deviate from that a little bit if there's like, you know, a dance to go to, or, you know, we decide to enter, you know, a synchronized swimming competition or something. But like, for the most part, we are fairly on task. The BSC, like, this is like a mystery on top of a whole bunch of other stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of talked about that, but there's a lot going on. We're doing a lot of multitasking. We're solving a lot of problems while we're also tackling, you know, an international crime. Also, I realized the Clue Crew is, like, substantially older than the BSC, but I don't think I don't know.
What?
Like, I don't know that the BSC was ever in, like, a murder situation.
Oh, I agree. While there was a lot of suspense, I was never like, oh, we might lose one of these children. Like, someone's going to actually commit a heinous crime here. Yes, but many times, like, Nancy and Bess and George are whacked over the head and...
Right. I think the closest we got to, like, the threat of physical harm is that list of scare-away ideas that we find in the Cooper's drawer.
Oh, yes. Speak about that. We didn't talk about that.
So at one point, the BSC decides that, like, the next step in their investigating is they really need to break into... They know it's the Cooper's, but they need some proof. So they break into the Cooper's bedroom. And in their bedroom, they find this list of all of these ideas about how they are going to scare the Menderses away from the house. And... it's a very Bond villain plan. Like, you should never write down your evil plan, you know? But it's stuff from ranging from, like, we're going to put poison ivy oil inside of their clothes, which
awful
evil, to we're going to set a small electrical fire in Martha's bedroom.
Oh, I forgot about that one. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
And, like, everything in between, you know, we're going to pretend to be a ghost and we're going to make sounds in the walls and da 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 da. But, like, you know, while I agree with you, I don't think they were actually going to intentionally try to harm one of these children. I think that was the closest we got to being like, oh, like, they might be willing to cross a line.
You are right. I forgot about the list. And some of those things are... I mean
they're not great.
They're all bad, but
yeah, we call that evidence in a court of law.
Okay, so what is going to keep you up at night about this book? What open questions do you have?
I mean, I guess I would really like to know if, you know, Jesse and Mallory are stuck back in Stony Brook. They're not allowed to go on vacation, and not only are they not allowed to go on vacation, they're like working triple time trying to keep things afloat. So I want to know, are they going to get a break? I want them to get a break.
I don't think they want a break. I think they are like in intern mode and they're like, I got to earn my stripes. And I honestly think they're stoked about this opportunity to prove that they can hold down the BSC Stony Brook headquarters.
God, I think you're right, Karen.
I don't think they want a break.
I think you're absolutely right. They are in intern mode.
I hate that for them because I have been in that place and I'm like, no, respect your worth.
I think you're probably right. Anyway, how about you? Do you have any open questions?
I do, and I am hopeful that you can answer this as a close reader of the Babysitter's Club lore for a long time. There are multiple references to an absent Babysitter's Club member who I remember from the few of these that I read. We talk about Stacy, who used to be one of the core members, and we allude several times in this book to like a massive falling out with her and that she is no longer part of the Babysitter's Club. And like Claudia specifically is like, I don't even care what she's up to. She's not a friend of the club and she's no longer a friend of mine. And that seemed very different than the rest of the vibes of this book. So what is the deal with Stacy?
Oh, Karen, I would love to tell you.
Thank God. Oh my gosh. I was hoping you would know because this was driving me nuts.
Uh-huh. So Stacy McGill is a founding member of the club. She is like the, she's typically described as sophisticated. Okay. That is kind of her descriptor. She's originally from New York City and her parents reload to Stony Brook. So she's the cool one from the city. She's besties with Claudia.
Oh.
Yeah. So this, I'm pretty sure the incident they are referencing is, it's pretty late in the series. I think the title of the book is Stacy versus the BSC. And again, I'm going off of memory here, but the gist is that Stacy gets a boyfriend named Robert.
Robert.
And Robert is kind of a cool guy, and he comes with a set of cool friends. And like Stacy kind of only wants to hang out with Robert, her new boyfriend, and like Robert's friends now. And they're like the cool people. Stacy is all of a sudden like kind of embarrassed by her Babysitter's Club friends.
Oh, I am mad at Stacy now too. I'm very triggered by this.
So as she spends more and more time with Robert and cool kids, she's pulling away more and more from the BSC, and even worse, she's like dropping the ball left, right, and center on her babysitting gigs and like not doing a great job babysitting, and parents are complaining and all this stuff. And finally, like, there's some inciting incident, I'm not sure what, but like basically she gets fired from the Babysitter's Club. Christy fires her.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I think she has a, like, you can't fire me, I quit kind of vibe. But yeah, so there is a hard break. Now, at some point, they do mend fences, and she comes back, like, with her tail between her legs. But that is what has happened when this book is going on. Stacy has been kicked out of the Babysitter's Club and is, because she, yeah.
She wow.
wasn't being a very good friend or a very good babysitter.
Double whammy. Thank you so much for that insight. I was
you are so welcome.
They dangled the carrot several times and I was like, what did Stacy do?
I love a dangled carrot.
Yes. You learned that phrase on this podcast. Okay. Well, it's time to rate this puppy. This week we are rating the Babysitter's Haunted House out of a 12 possible parade floats.
Ooh.
What do you rate this book, Kelly, my sister?
Probably unsurprisingly, I give it 12 out of 12 parade floats.
Yes, a perfect score.
I mean, I love these books. I love these books. Like, they're fun, they're fast paced, they're cute. Like, we get to do all kinds of activities. So, yeah, no notes. I loved it. What sayest thou?
I also gave it 12 out of 12 parade floats.
No, you didn't. You actually really liked this book.
I loved this book. I have nothing but positive things to say. It exceeded...
We've got a BSC convert on our hands, folks.
Oh, it just exceeded my wildest expectations. I'm in love with the Babysitter's Club. It was perfection on a parade float.
Oh, I'm going to send you some of my favorites now on Kindle to read.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm going to come to your house and I'm just going to steal them all off your shelf and read them while
no,
I'm there.
No, you're absolutely not.
Sisters. No,
those are in the permanent collection.
Okay, well, we knocked it out of the park on this one. We're going on holiday break. What are we going to read next when we come back?
When we get back, we're picking up where we left off with the Nancy Drew series, which will be The Clue of the Whistling Bagpipes, in which we get to go to the Scottish Highlands, which, oh my Jamie Fraser, I can't wait.
I was just about to drop an Outlander ref, and I'm so glad that you did it for me.
I love it.
Well, delightful listeners, please rate, review, and subscribe. Please tell a friend, and you can find us on Instagram at It's a Glue Podcast, where we do all of the fun things like the one sentence plot competition and more.
And please consider becoming a Helen Corning friend on Patreon. We'll give you a shout out. We have some bonus content for season 3 episodes that's available just for our patrons, and you get to vote to pick Super Sleuth titles.
Okay, Kelly, I want you to remember what we learned today in the Babysitter's Haunted House.
And what is that?
If your family inherits a haunted house in the suburbs, always keep an open mind. Being a big fish in a small pond has a lot of benefits, and you might just become the coach of the local softball team.
Aw, that's like just really good advice.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
And with that, happy sleuthing.
And happy holidays.
And happy holidays. Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho.
It's a Clue is hosted by Kelly Biscopink and Karen Farmer. Our logo is designed by Courtney Kyle. You can find her on social media at I Am Courtney Kyle. The It's a Clue theme song was written and recorded by Danny W. You can find her on Facebook at Danny W. Music. Audio engineering is graciously done by our friend Mark Goodlow.